Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you as we are also excited about the start of the final major of the year. That, of course, tomorrow, coming up very, very soon if you live in the States, because remember, they're like 6 hours or 7 hours ahead, depending on where you live. But the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool will get teeing off here in just a little bit. And we're going to have join us here a guy who knows a little bit about the Open Championship, and that is Todd Hamilton, the 2004 Open champion. That surprised and shocked a lot of people, shocked the golf world in 2004 when he did it. And we'll have Todd join us here in just a little bit. In the meantime, to talk about his own Open Championship experiences, a man who just barely missed winning the Claire Jug, Frank Bassett in the Nashville studios. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing good. Thanks for that. Great introduction.
Remember that? I do. You almost did it. Yeah, back then. It was so close.
If you look closely on the internet, you'll see me holding the Claret Jug up, kissing it. It happened to be Zach Johnson's at the time.
Oh, really? But,
yeah. It was a great picture. He let me, I said, may I hold that thing? He said, carefully, you can. And then, he went on to break it, by the way. He damaged it at one time.
Well, it's like a Stanley Cup or something, right? We'll talk to Todd, see what he drank out of it or did whatever. But then you have to return it too, right?
You keep it for
Smith
a year.
This year, kind of had a tear in his eye when he had to bring the Claret Jug back, he said.
So you get a replica
or you make one, I guess. Well, again, our guest here will know all the answers to these questions, but I would imagine that you would make a copy of one and put it somewhere. It's a pretty impressive.
It's kind of selfish to take it back, isn't it?
No, it's like the belt, you get.
I think it's a great tradition where you hand it back, the original back. I think that's pretty cool.
I think, am I remembering this right? Gary Player did not know that rule at Augusta. Do the same thing there, right? You bring it back. And I guess that's the tradition of it, is that that has the same trophy, literally, that Byron Nelson held and Bobby Jones and whatever.
At the time, Player wore it. He wore it out of the club, if you recall.
What do you mean, wore it out?
He left with the green jacket on, got on a plane with it on, I believe. And he got a phone call and said, hey, at the time you weren't allowed to take it out of Augusta National, I believe.
You get it for a year, right? And then you bring it back or do whatever. So, it's all kinds of traditions. Yeah. He's probably chomping at the bit because thinking we're a bunch of idiots and Todd's got all the answers to all these questions. So let's bring him in, the 2004 Open champion, Todd Hamilton, with us now. Todd, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Not too bad. So clarify a little bit of that. You won the job. We'll go back and talk about that. But yeah, all those questions we had. You get it for a year? Is that the rule with the Claret Jug?
Yeah, almost a year. Probably about 360 days, as you have to turn it in on Tuesday or Wednesday when you get there. So they need a little bit of time to clean it up. I'm not sure what all goes on with every guy that wins it, but I'm sure sometimes it needs more cleaning than others, if you know what I mean.
So what did you do with it? Did you drink a little champagne or beer or something out of it, I'm sure?
I did. I didn't go too crazy with it. Matter of fact, the night that I won, after I did all my media stuff, we went to an Italian restaurant. We had gone there the Wednesday or Tuesday of the week of the tournament before it actually started. And the owner of the restaurant came around, asked if we were there for the golf. We all piped up yes. And my caddy, he said, when we win, we're going to come back here Sunday night. And we all had a big laugh. My wife was there. My mother was there. And my kids were there as well. And we all laughed at the comment my caddy made. And sure enough, it happened. So we went there that night. And I had the trophy. It was probably 11:30 at night. And they were having a party for the workers there. So I knocked on the door. The blinds kind of went up. Somebody looked out, held up the trophy, and they let us in for about 4 hours, and we partied with all the staff. The owner was super nice. They cooked dinner for us, and that was the first time that I drank out of it. He had some champagne that he put in there for us, and we partied for probably four to five hours maybe. Had some friends that were big Miller Lite fans, so he wanted to drink Miller Lite out of it. So we filled that up one night. But like I said earlier, I didn't go too crazy with it. Matter of fact, yeah. I never, when I had the one that they gave me for winning to travel for a year, I didn't really have it set out in the house because I was always gone playing events. I didn't want somebody to come in and take it knowing right. I was gone. So I just left it in the case in my closet. And if somebody came over and wanted to see it, then I would bring it out. But I didn't
know. Did you get a replica
crazy.
Made? I mean, do you have one at your house that looks like it?
I did,
like
yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, they gave me one. All the names are etched in it down to my name. And mine, is, I think, is about 9/10 of the size of the original one, just so it doesn't get mixed up okay. for some reason.
That's got to be a hell of an experience. I mean, you know, winning the Open Championship, and you went on, I believe, that year to, weren't you PGA Tour Rookie of the Year that year also? Or
I was, yeah, at about 38 years old. Yeah, I was kind of the Ichiro of golf.
Yeah, but, boy, you had a heck of a career across the way across the pond over in
the Pacific. Yeah.
Yeah, the Pacific Rim. Yeah, what a career over there.
I kind of had an odd, I guess, way of getting on the PGA Tour. I played golf on the Asian Tour for about 5 years. That consisted of going to countries such as India, Pakistan, Indonesia, Korea, Japan, Thailand, Malaysia. So I did that for about 5 years, and on my fifth try was their Order Merit Champion, which gave me a year exemption on the Japanese golf tour. Although it's same area, it was a different tour, the Japanese and the Asian tour. And I ended up playing in Japan for about 12 years. And my last year in Japan, I finished well enough on their money list. I was third on their money list by about $5,000. And that allowed me to go straight to the finals of the tour school in the States. And I got my card that year, which would have been December of 2003. And 2004 was my rookie year. Again, at 38 years old.
Yeah, but wow, what a great career you had over there, and you won a lot of money on that tour too. But I want to ask you something away from the Open real quick because of where I used to live. I've spent 14 years living in Sawgrass at Ponte Vedra. What was your first thought when you had to play? It was the old TPC in those days, the TPC Sawgrass, that Pete Dye course. What was your first thought coming over from playing all over the Asian Tour and, of course, the Japan Tour? How was that in your head when you teed that up the first day?
You're talking about where they have the Players' Championship, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. You know, obviously, I'd watched that many times on TV, and living here in Dallas area, I moved down to Dallas in the early 90s, and I played at a course called Stonebridge Country Club.
Sure.
And they have a Pete Dye course there. So it was very similar to the Players' Championship. Look-wise, obviously the fairways were a little bit tighter for the Players' Championship than they were at the Pete Dye course in McKinney. But it had a very similar look. So it wasn't like it was brand new. Yeah. It was intimidating, but so was the course I played in McKinney.
Sure. The reason I ask that is, you know, they've redone 17. That seems to be the lucky number for the next to the last hole these days where you can't recover from a bad hole. But they've redone 17 now for this year's Open Championship, and it's 136 yards of Terra, you know, just like TPC Sawgrass is. And that was my reasoning behind that, Tim, if you're wondering how my brain's firing on half the
cylinder. I was trying to follow the logic. Yeah, I just stayed quiet, trying to figure it out myself.
I think I actually played Hoy Lake two times when they had the Open there in 06, and 14 was the last time they played when McIlroy won.
Right.
And I think back then the hole that used to be 17 is now 15. I think they've changed some of the routing of the holes, or at least the numbers. And they've built, as you mentioned, they built a whole new hole, which is now 15. I think there's going to be some high scores on that hole, especially if the wind picks up a little bit. I saw a little segment on Golf Channel the other night with Aaron Oberholzer, and he was dropping balls on the greens and just off the edges, and they were rolling into spots that nobody would ever want to be in. And I heard guys were hitting anywhere from 9 irons to little chip 6 irons the other day in the practice round. So It looks like it's a very small target. It looks to me like an upside down saucer. So if you you're not spot on with your yardage and somewhat spot on with your direction, you're going to have to hit some very difficult chips or bunker shots to try to save par. So I think there's going to be some pretty good excitement on that hole there.
Tim and I often have the discussion with every one of our guests all across the world of golf and amateurs about the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass or the 17th hole at Hoy Lake now this year being so dangerously penal that there is no recovery time whatsoever. What are your thoughts on that?
It puts a very big premium on one shot. I think the one at TPC Sawgrass, if that hole is number seven during the round, it's not a big deal. And that green is so big, you should never miss that green as a pro. Now, if you throw in some wind at 15, 20 miles an hour, mm-hmm. and you're trying to hit it at the pin that's on the side of the green, rather than just go to the center of the green, you're probably going to have some problems. But I always played the 17th at Sawgrass. I just tried to hit it in the middle of the green.
Yeah.
For me, the easiest pin was in the very front part of the green. You have a little bit of a backstop that you can use. It never was windy, real windy, where you had to hit a 7-iron or a 6-iron into that hole. It was always a wedge or 9-iron for me when I played. So it wasn't – I never thought it was that difficult. I think I never hit it in the water there. I think I made one birdie and one bogey. But I was always trying to hit it in the center of the green. I think I made about a 12-footer for birdie once and three-putted for my other bogey.
Yeah, that was just the strategy.
I was just trying to minimize my mistake there. And three to me was a good score.
Yeah, and this year, you know, number 17 at Hoy Lake, it just, wow. I saw the Oberholzer piece and some other players talk about it. Rom, by the way, had a great comment. He said, well, you know, John is so politically correct most of the time. He said, everyone has to play it. So,
right.
You know,
yeah, it's true.
That's everybody's got to go through that hole. But man, that thing looks wicked. It looks so
wicked.
I do
like the fact that it kind of, you know, does set some people apart. It does add some drama, right? You're coming down on 18, or I mean, on 16, getting ready for that hole on Sunday, and you're in the hunt, and there's three or four guys that may make the difference, right? Which is what they want, right? They're saying, okay, that's going to probably maybe determine the champion right there. We're talking, by the way, Todd Hamilton, 2004 Open Champion, who, by the way, Todd, do you call it the Open Championship? Now they just want to call it the Open. I think there's an arrogance here, and I'm going to let it out. I'm going to say it. These British people,
here we go,
Tim. They get to own the Open, and nobody else gets to call it. It's kind of like the Ohio State. Just because you want to call it that doesn't mean the rest of us have to call it that. I still think, and I'm looking at the Dallas Morning News today, Frank.
He's wound up.
All over here is the British Open. The British Open. Here's the British Open. They're talking about the British Open. Well, and yet over there, they act like, how dare you use the word British? And you can't even use championship. They just want it to be the Open. So there you go, Todd. I laid it out for you. What's your feelings on that since you have a trophy?
You know what? They do have a point because it's not always in Britain. It's in Scotland.
That's a good point.
And
this
year it's in England. So
it's a good point. It's a good point.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
So, we've never thought of that.
When I'm in the States, I call it the British Open. When I'm over there, I call it the Open.
Okay, that makes sense.
I grew up, and we all probably grew up as it being the British Open.
Sure.
And then over there, it's always been the Open Championship. So
yeah, okay.
But they do have a good point.
The United Kingdom
it's not
Open.
Always. Yeah, that's technically what it probably should be.
Yeah.
The United Kingdom Open.
Yeah, I've always thought that.
So thanks for the geography test there, Mr. Oklahoma graduate, Todd Hamilton. Let me ask you this, Todd. When you won, or you're in 2004, if you look at your resume and your open tournaments and whatnot, it's not, and I don't mean this disparagingly, but it's not glowing with great results, yet somehow everything that year became perfect. And at that tournament, because you got to remember, this is, you went into a playoff and beat Ernie Els. Colin Montgomery was playing very well. There's a guy named Tiger, Phil Mickelson. All those guys were there. How did Todd Hamilton come out of that pack? Just like you were talking about pre-dinner with the laughing when your caddy said that. What happened? How did it all come together for you that week?
Well, I remember I had a pretty good early start to the year. I won the Honda Classic in March.
Won the Honda, right.
Yeah, tailed off a little bit. I wasn't playing very good at all leading up to the Open Championship in 04. I remember the week before at the John Deere, I made the cut, but I played very poorly and finished close to last. So I wasn't very confident going over there. Matter of fact, my flight got delayed. I didn't get over there till a day later than I wanted to. I found something on the range. I wasn't playing good in the practice rounds, but I do remember taking very good notes, and I think that's important over there on those type of courses. I found something on the driving range in my setup, and I started to hit the ball out of the middle of the club. Now, they always weren't going straight, but at least I was hitting it solidly, and I could always work on the direction. But it's tough if you're not hitting the ball straight, or if you're not hitting the ball solidly, it's tough. I did start hitting the ball solidly and started to gain a little more confidence. I chipped and putted very well that week. And that's all I thought about was that swing thought. And all that was getting my belt buckle pointed at the golf ball at address. I have a habit that my belt buckle gets pointed too far to the left because I like to cut the ball from left to right. Mm-hmm. And by pointing the belt buckle at the ball, it allowed me to stay a little more closed or square at impact. And I was able to hit the ball more solidly, get some distance. I was chipping and putting really well, so all I needed to do was start hitting the ball somewhere where I was looking with some authority. And as I said, I didn't always hit them straight, but I think I only hit in two bunkers that week. One was one that I didn't get up and down. I missed about a 4-foot putt for par. And the other one was a second shot into a par five. I hit it up by the green, and I was probably 20 or 30 yards short in a bunker, which didn't really affect me. I didn't get that one up and down, but it didn't cost me a bogey. So I stayed out of trouble for the most part. But I think when you're really struggling, sometimes people think of four or five different things that they need to do. And I just had one thought that I was thinking of, and I think that made things a little more simple for me. Lo and behold, it worked out.
This was at Troon, right?
Royal Troon.
Yeah. Were you intimidated at all by the surroundings, not only the course and being there, the fact you're saying you didn't feel like you had your A game going, but there you are with all the stars of the world that you're playing with. And you were near the lead, had the lead most of the time you're playing for all four rounds. Did at any point, I don't want to say panicked, doesn't sound right in my world, I would be panicking. Was there any intimidation or panic or what am I doing here? Or can I keep this going thoughts as you went to the third and fourth round?
You know, not really. To me, it was kind of like finding, you know, you knew you had $20 in your pocket, but you lost it. And then you did your laundry and all of a sudden you found that $20 in the dryer. You know, you left it in your pocket. That's what it felt like to me. I knew I was a good player. I wasn't playing well, but I knew deep down if I could just do a couple things properly, I knew all that confidence would come back. And that's what happened that week. I was always a pretty good chipper and putter. My downfall was I never hit the ball very good. When I hit the ball well, I seemed to play well. The putting and chipping really never left. So there were nerves, you know, but they kind of went away the first two, three, four holes maybe. And Royal Troon is a course that when I played it, at least, you could hit a lot of irons off the first two or three holes, depending on the direction of the wind, which obviously hitting irons compared to trying to hit driver and navigate through those pot bunkers is a lot easier. So it was kind of an easy start for me. The hard part of the course was coming in. on the inward nine. It seemed like the wind was always into off the left. And although for the whole week it wasn't real, real windy, it did get up to probably 15 or 20 miles an hour, I think, on that last round. But coming in the last nine holes, the wind seemed like it was always into off the left. And as a right-hander, that's probably the worst wind for a right-handed golfer. So I did have nerves. I love that kind of golf, and that's what kind of kept me inspired for the week, even though I wasn't playing very well starting off. I love to play that kind of golf, and that kind of got me excited. And as I said, I found that little tip on the driving range. Worked out great. And made a few putts when I needed to.
So again, let me ask you this part too. And there's a fascination of how that all came together for you that particular week. But you go to 18, correct me if I'm wrong, with a one-shot lead and then lost that lead with a bogey on the final hole. Ernie Els had a chance to win it and missed his 15-foot putt or so, left it a little bit short. So you go to a playoff. So take me through, if you could, take us through 18, knowing you had at that point the lead and a par wins a British Open for you, and then getting into a playoff and still being able to come back and collect yourself to get into playoff against Ernie Els, who already at that point had a claret jug in his possession. Take us through those thoughts.
Yeah, I actually had a two-shot lead with two holes to go in regulation. 17 was a difficult par three. I think we were hitting four irons to it. I hit a pretty good shot, made par. Els hit a great shot in there, ended up making about a 12-footer for birdie. So the lead was down to one. 18, I didn't hit a very good shot off the tee, hit a two iron. It was in the rough, tried to hit it up around the green. Rough caught my club, turned it left, ball went way left. So far left, I was debating on taking a drop from some stands, which I actually ended up doing. And I was still 30 yards from the hole. Pitched it on, ended up making bogey. I think I had about a 15, 20 footer to win it outright, but missed it. As you mentioned, Els had about a 15 footer. It was a difficult putt, but deep down, I thought he was going to make it. I remember taking my hat off and getting ready to shake his hand. But when he missed, I felt that I had new life. And their playoffs over there are four hole aggregates. It's not sudden death. So,
right.
It's not like you only have one hole to win or lose it. You have four holes you can build on getting a little momentum, I guess. We played 1-2, which are pretty easy holes. First hole, he had the better chance at birdie than I did. Second hole, I had a better chance at birdie than he did. We kind of did a candy cane U-turn around and came in 17 and 18. 17 about, I don't know, 45 minutes earlier, he had just birdied, as I mentioned. I hit a good shot in there about 15 feet. He pulled his iron left to the green, very difficult up and down. I thought he hit a pretty good pitch. It was about 12 feet and almost the same putt he made for birdie in regulation. I think I was 15, 20 feet short of the hole. I didn't hit a very good putt, but made par. He missed his 10 or 12 footer to make a bogey. Got to the last hole. I had a one-shot lead in the playoff, and I hit a poor shot on that hole. Luckily, I didn't hit it solidly, because if I had, I'd gone into the deep, deep rough. I was just in a little bit of rough. He hit a beautiful, high-towering two-iron down the middle, carbon copy of 18 in regulation for him. My second shot, I hit a five-iron. I don't remember the yardage, but I know I had enough club to get over a bunker that was about 10 or 12 yards short of the green, and I hit the iron pretty well. And as the ball's coming down, right when it hits the ground, you can hear the crowd kind of ooh and aah. And I'm thinking, oh no, it went in the bunker, because I didn't see it bounce. Els hit a shot identical to his 18th hole in regulation. He hit a seven iron again to about 15 feet or so. Almost identical putt he had in regulation. So I get up there, and my ball had not gone in the bunker. It had hit just on top where a lot of sand had accumulated from people hitting out of the bunker, That's why I never saw it bounce. It hit dead and just kind of trickled over the bunker. So I was about 10 yards short of the green. And I do remember
this is a great shot. Frank. I don't know if you're – yeah, this is great. Tell us this part. I love this.
No, I love this. Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff I wish I could remember that I don't, but I remember this very vividly, that the pin was on 21 steps. How? I don't know how I remember. But I was about 10 yards short of green, 21 steps to the hole. The whole week I'd been using this hybrid, which was my three wood. It was a 17 degree club bent to 14 degrees. I was not a big fan of three woods. Still, I'm not to this day. And I just like the look of the hybrid as a three wood. So I'd been using this club to chip slash putt with the whole week. And I don't know how many times I used it, but if I used it, say, 12 times, I got up and down every time except one time. And that was because I missed about a 5 foot putt. Anyway, I took this hybrid out, and the guy that made it for me used to work for the company called Sonar Tech, which was the company of the golf club. And I took the head cover off and I said to my caddy, "All right, Sticky, this is for you." Sticky was the guy's nickname. Dave was his real name. He went by Sticky. I don't know why he did, and I probably don't need to know either.
That's a whole nother story.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. But I said, "All right, Sticky, this is for you." And I took that club out, and I hit it. And I thought I hit it pretty good, but it didn't seem like it was going to get up. It had to get just over a ridge, and then the pin was probably two steps over that ridge. I didn't think it was going to get up over that ridge. But it kept rolling and rolling and rolling. And I thought, man, this could be pretty good. It just crested over the top of that ridge and stopped about, it couldn't have been more than 2.5 feet. And I went up there and marked it. And I knew Els had a really difficult putt. I'd actually seen that putt early that morning on TV watching the early telecast. One guy had it. He missed it low by at least two cups, and it was only a 15-footer. Els had missed that putt low by a cup or so in regulation. So I knew it was a difficult putt. He hit the putt. He missed it again low, I believe. So it was up to me to make this. I like to say it was about two size 10.5 foot joy shoes away. That's what I tell everyone. So if you would have timed me on all my, let's just say it was 2 feet. If you would have timed me on all my 2 foot putts throughout the year and you would have timed me there, it was probably the same amount of time I took on all those putts.
Yeah.
But it seemed like that went so fast. It just seemed like I did everything in halftime. But again, I probably spent the same amount of time as all the other 2 foot putts throughout the year. But I took the club back, knocked it in. I took a step toward the hole, and I almost forgot for a second that that was it. It seemed like there was more holes to be played.
Yeah.
Because I, excuse me, I immediately kind of hesitated. I reached down to get the ball rather than celebrate. And I kind of caught myself thinking, hey, that's it. You won. You don't need to get the ball. Just, you know, do your thing. Celebrate and hug your caddy and throw your putter and throw your hat and all that. I don't think I did half of those things, but it kind of didn't hit me right away. And then
a bit surreal. Yeah.
Yes. It was, as I said earlier, I didn't play very well leading up to that tournament. Found something. And it's kind of like riding a bike. Guys that are good at their craft, if they're in a slump, all they need is just a little kickstart, whether it be a new bat, a lighter bat, a new grip on a driver if they're driving it poorly, just something different. You know, it's never your fault. It's always the club. It's always the bat.
Yeah.
You know. The net on the rim was too loose or something.
I find that to be true. Yeah, in my game.
Blame something else. Don't blame yourself.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing.
I mean, I love that story. I mean, he remembers every shot, every inch.
And you would. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I've looked at the video, and you know, four holes against Ernie Els would be, and Ernie was obviously at the time one of the top players in the world, and it would have been okay. Wow, I could have won on. I did. Now I got four more holes. But I think you had the right attitude to just go, hey, we got four holes. I can do anything. And to have that left 2 feet, I'd still be standing over the putt, Todd, is all I'm saying. I'd still be there waiting to see if I can. They'd have to brace to take me out of my shoes to get me off.
Somehow.
Take that club back would be so hard with all that on the line. And yet you're right. Do what you've always done, and it worked out perfect for you.
Somehow I think you'd be over the wedge, Tim.
I would have done the hybrid, too. The hybrid, genius there, Todd.
Yeah, that is.
Hybrid because it rolled right to the hole.
It's a great play. It's foolproof. To this day, I don't think I've ever chunked one of those, but I've chunked a lot of chips. I know that.
Yeah.
I think two things were in my favor in that playoff. One, I was playing with house money. You know, I'd already basically finished second if I lose the playoff. And two, I had played with Ernie the third round. I think I had the lead by a shot after actually, I don't know if I had the lead after 2 days or not. I don't remember if I did. Anyway, I played with Ernie the third day and the fourth day, and I know I had the lead going into the final round by a shot.
Yeah.
So I played with him on the third day for 18 holes, and then I just played 18 holes with him again. So we kind of knew each other's game, and we each had a mutual friend from McKinney, Texas, believe it or not. And I had played with him one other time, I think, in Japan when I used to play over there. We got paired together. So although there wasn't a lot of familiarity, having been with him for two straight days was consoling, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it worked out perfectly, and there you are, the 2004 Open champion, and you've always got that to talk about and brag about. We're talking with Todd Hamilton and his experiences there. So tell us what you think, what you're feeling about the state of golf now. Who do you like? We're looking forward to tomorrow again when the Open Championship continues at Royal Liverpool. What are your thoughts on, is it a course, you obviously have played it a few different times. Is that a course that favors any particular golfer style? And I guess we're talking Rahm and certainly Rory and Scheffler, the normal guys would be the expected favorites.
I think that tournament there, it always comes down to weather. And I don't think the weather's supposed to be too bad as far as wind. I think they might get some rain. There's probably a 50% chance of rain every day at least. But I don't think the wind is supposed to be terrible, at least what I saw. So if the weather's not terrible, it allows a lot of different players to have a chance to win. Obviously, you got to look at Scheffler. He's been on an incredible streak of top 10s or top 15.
So consistent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like his game travels really well no matter where he plays. Rahm is a good pick. He's been kind of quiet lately. He had a great start to the year and is probably the lead guy for player of the year. I think he's won four times this year. You know, Tommy Fleetwood's been having some good scores lately.
Oh,
he's,
yeah.
He's kind of a local guy, too, I believe.
Yeah.
I think he grew up close to there.
Fleetwood. Love Fleetwood. He was my pick for this. So, yeah.
For some reason, Xander Schauffele's name sticks out to me, and I don't know why, but for some reason, his name is sticking out to me. I have about six or seven friends that we usually do a pool. We've done this for probably 4, maybe 5 years. Every major, each guy picks two people, and you can pick the same guys, and you pick a winning score. You have to get both of those right to win the pool. Now, if you win the pool, you only win $5 from each guy, so it's basically just a bragging pool. It's not a way to get rich quick. So let's say we've done it for 5 years. You have four majors. That's 20 majors. It's only been gotten correct three times, so it's very difficult. And I think this is probably the most difficult of the three to pick a score, because you don't know the weather conditions and what, you know, you get some crazy bounces and one guy can make a 10 in a hole because he can't get out of a bunker.
Oh, right.
So this is probably the most difficult one. And needless to say, nobody's ever gotten this major correct. So
Todd, would you agree with this statement? I've said this and on several other shows that I end up on talking with people, that to me, the Open Championship or the Open is so difficult beyond the player's ability comes the 15th club, the player's brain. What club do you select? What shot do you select? Because there's so many options out there on those courses. Would you agree with that, or is that a...
I do agree with you, and I think it's difficult for guys that play over here in the States all the time to have success over there. I know a lot of them go over there a week or two early just to try to get acclimated to not only the weather, but, you know, the ball running for 50 or 60 yards. I remember when I played in 2006 at Hoy Lake, I think Tiger hit one driver the whole week. I do know he was struggling with his driver, and he just said, hey, I'm going to get myself in the fairway. I'm way better than everyone else with irons, so I'm going to play to my best ability this week. And lo and behold, he won. But that course was so burnt out that week. You could see the only green patches you could see were in the low areas where the water had collected or the dew had gotten down in those little dips and depressions. Everything else was baked out, and the ball was running forever. I remember, I think they've moved the 18th tee back this year, but Dustin Johnson skipped a few holes and came to 18 while I was playing 18. And he hit a 9-iron into that hole. It was blowing downwind a little bit, but not that much. I think I hit a pretty good drive and hit a 3-iron, and that guy hit a 9-iron into it. And I think they moved the tee back about 50 or 60 yards this year, so probably won't see any 9-irons, but you'll probably see some longer irons if it's downwind.
I remember this distinctly watching that, and this happens at other Open Championships as well. But I remember that one with Tiger, how dusty it was. Frank, remember that's every shot out of the fairway. It was like dust would blow up, like somebody just had a firecracker. They lit.
I don't
at contact, and you hear dust, and you just see dust flap after every shot.
I don't think that he
bizarre.
Is that the tournament? I'm trying to recall. He didn't put it in one bunker the entire week.
I know he didn't in St. Andrews one year. He did not.
Maybe it was St. Andrews.
I think in 2000.
That was it. That's
when he won by about, I don't know, 7 or 8 shots.
Well, I mean, but his strategy was not to hit in bunkers. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't at Hoy Lake, because that's why he hit irons, to avoid those and to avoid that run out where you think you had a great drive. And unfortunately, it runs out a lot farther than you want. That extra 20 yards puts it right in one of those bunkers, which I, as a amateur watching this, absolutely love to see the guys. Sorry, Todd.
Stop
to say this,
it.
But the pros.
Stop
to just
it.
See those guys looking at it.
There you go.
When they get up to it and they got a 8-foot face on the bunker, they're going backwards. It's just, there's some kind of pleasure in watching the best golfers in the world have to struggle with those things. And no, seriously, I got hit a 20-yard shot sideways, right? It's just like the last thing they want to do. But sometimes that's your only choice, right?
Did you boys see yesterday, though, in the practice round? I can't remember what player it was. I just caught it in passing. He was up against, this is on number 17, I believe, the 10-foot bunker face, and he was right up against it. And he just, it looks like he opened up a 60 to make it about a 90, hit it straight up in the air and just took his hand and hit the ball as it was coming down to knock it onto the green.
See, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
I did not.
I thought you had to hit. I thought you had to use your head.
Is that
there,
the
right?
Phil Mickelson rule book? Or the ball doesn't have to stop and you go get it, hit it back?
I'll tell you one thing. One thing that's crazy about those bunkers, they might only be 5 or 6 steps wide, but the areas leading up to the bunkers just outside, there might be 3 or 4 steps where the ball will funnel down into them. So although they're 5 or 6 feet wide. They actually play bigger because the area around them is a little bit lower, and the ball just kind of funnels right into them.
It looks
to me like the sands. I heard something that they did to the bunkers where they leveled them out in the bottom, so the ball doesn't, it doesn't roll up to the edges. They're just flat, so it makes it even harder to get them out. It's almost like they're deeper. But they did something crazy to them. I guess if they can't roll the ball back yet, they'll get the players in other ways.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that a bunch of times, right? There's ways on the golf course to make adjustments and not have to worry about the ball rolling back. The guys just have to be smarter how they hit it and where they hit it so that it goes to the right places. Well, Todd, we appreciate your time and your stories and recapping what happened
absolutely
back in 04 and your predictions of what's going on. And if your schedule allows, we'd love to have you on again, maybe a little bit down the road, and talk about some more golf-related stuff. We never got into LIV and what's going on with that and your thoughts on all that kind of stuff. We'd love to talk to you about that at some point, too.
Sounds good. I'll take Scheffler at 12-under. That's my pick.
Okay. 12-under.
Scheffler, 12-under.
Okay.
Okay. You got Frank.
Is that for five? For five.
That's $5 from Todd.
Five from Todd. $5, yeah.
Okay.
Well, Venmo.
I'll take Fleetwood at, I think he's going to shoot 12-under. I'll take Fleetwood at 12. Yeah.
And my guy is going to be, and I've got two.
Oh, now you can't have two.
We're going with Americans, but I know. But I like Cantlay for one. And my second is a little bit of a late bloomer this year, and that's Ricky. I think Ricky's got his game going pretty well.
Sneaky.
He's played well. You know, he actually, I believe, when Tiger won.
Second place.
When Rory won in 14, he was a runner-up at the same golf course. So I think Ricky likes this course. So those are kind of my two, but I'm gonna if I had to take one, I'm going to take Ricky.
All right.
See if he can do it. Todd, thanks again for your time. We really appreciate it. We'll have you on again. Talk real soon, okay?
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
Take care, Todd. All right. Todd Hamilton. Is that Bogey?
No, that was Todd's dog.
Todd's dog?
Yeah,
no,
that was Todd's dog. That doesn't. Bogey is not that big. Trust me. Bogey's a little snazzer. Yeah.
Todd's dog is telling him it's time to get off. We got to go for a walk.
Dad, food. No more, feed
no
me
more,
now.
No more talking. No more talking. Anyway, fascinating stuff, right? I mean, I just
love that.
For those guys that are, and there are a few of those, right? There's the Sean McKeels, if you will, Rich Beams, and, you know, every so often you get a guy who really doesn't dominate in any way and was never expected to win a major.
Yeah.
And somehow it all comes together, right? And it did for him. And I watched that highlight of that shot that he hit. And because those fairways, as you know, Frank, are right around the greens, are so tight. It's almost just dirt, right, if you will.
Yeah.
And to take a wedge out and hit that, for me, is impossible. But even for the pros, it's a very daunting shot because the green rolls, and you don't got to hit it at the right place to get it over that mountain. Take that hybrid out and just kind of – he hit a great shot. I mean, it was probably 40, 50, 60 feet off from the pin, and he rolled it 2 feet. I mean, it was beautiful. So – yep, he's got that story to tell the rest of his life. All right, let's take a quick time out, and we'll talk a little bit more. Frank and I have given our predictions, but we'll talk a little bit more about the Open Championship getting ready to start at Royal Liverpool. You're listening to Golf Talk America, and we'll return right after this.
Hey, everybody, Frank Bassett here, and I want to talk to you about something very special to me. And if your business earns millions or tens of millions of revenue, stop what you're doing and take a listen. Because NetSuite by Oracle has just rolled out the best offer we've ever seen. Let's talk about some of the things that it has. I mean, NetSuite gives you the visibility and control you need to make better decisions faster. For the first time in NetSuite's 25 years as the number one cloud financial system, you can defer payments of a full NetSuite implementation for 6 months. That's no payment and no interest for 6 months. And you can take advantage of this special financing offer today. Hey, folks, NetSuite's number one because they give your business everything you need in real time, all in one place, to reduce manual processes, boost efficiency, build forecasts, and increase productivity across every department. Let me tell you, I've been in a lot of businesses in my lifetime, and I haven't seen anything as powerful and as easy to use than NetSuite is. It is absolutely a fantastic product, and you got to go take a look at it. More than 36,000 companies have already upgraded to NetSuite, gaining visibility and control over their financials, inventory, HR, e-commerce, and even more. If you've been sizing NetSuite up to make the switch, then you know this deal is unprecedented. No interest, no payments. Take advantage of the special financing offer at netsuite.com/golftalk. That's netsuite.com/golftalk to get the visibility and control you need to weather any storm. netsuite.com/golftalk. Hey, everybody. Frank Bassett here, and I want to talk to you about something. I want to talk to you about Bird Dogs. Not Bird Dogs, Bird Dogs. Bird Dogs make you look good. Bird Dogs stretch khaki shorts are designed to fit slimmer through the thigh and leg, giving you a truly sculpted look. That's what the girls like, sculpted looks, right? So, let me tell you this. Bird Dog shorts do the exact same thing as Lululemon, but fit way better. They fit way better than regular shorts that are made of a stiff, restricting cotton. Bird Dogs fixed this issue by inventing cloud knit fabric that looks just like khaki, but stretches, so you get a way slimmer fit without having to sacrifice movement. Bird Dogs uses anti-stink, sweat-wicking fabric that keeps you cool and dry all day long. And that's what you want, right? Cool and dry all day long. Let me tell you, I have Bird Dogs. I'll absolutely wear them and love them to death. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to birddogs.com/golftalk for a free Yeti style tumbler with your order. That's birddogs.com/golftalk, all one word, GOLFTALK, for a free Yeti style tumbler. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off, we promise you. Well, you might want to take them off once in a while if you have to wash them, but they're really a great product, folks. I want you to reach out there, go to birddogs.com/golftalk for a free Yeti style tumbler with your order. Do it today.
And welcome back, everybody, to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett talking
Hello.
About the British Open.
The British Open. That.
By the way, before we go further into that, congratulations to a good friend who's going to be, I think, joining us next week, and that is Harrison Frazier.
Yes,
who
absolutely.
Did extremely well, although I know he was right there with Ernie Els, as a matter of fact, playing. Yeah. In a final round at the College Firestone or Champion Fire, hello, the College Companies Championship at
say.
Firestone. Wow, that's what I was trying to say.
The College Companies Championship,
which is a major
Firestone Country Club
for the seniors.
Well, it is a major.
Know that, Frank?
Yeah,
it's a major.
Yeah. Well, you're on Firestone for heaven's sakes. It's a major.
And, yes. And anyway, so Harrison had the lead for a while, back and forth, finished tied for third. But a very, very good, his best finish, actually, on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, so, what a great final round for him. It's a shame he couldn't make it all the way, but we were pulling for him, for sure.
Well, and frickin' Stricker. Frickin' Stricker.
Oh, geez, I mean,
from now on.
Automatic.
Win? Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there's not an emotion in his face. There's not a hitch in his swing. I mean, everything is just very, very, very robotic.
He
just goes about business and doesn't seem to ever... I mean, if he shoots a 70, I think he starts to cry.
He cries out of happiness. He's a very emotional guy, but he's Ben Hogan when he's playing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
By the way, I watched Follow the Sun. I couldn't sleep last night, thunderstorms. So
really?
I found Follow the Sun with Glenn Ford, the original movie, the Ben Hogan story. It's so funny to watch those old movies because they're kind of, okay,
Yeah.
And they were great actors, okay. But it was really good.
You.
It was really good.
I'm with you on that. There was something about acting in a broad sense. Let's go to left field here. But when you look at old movies, I don't care if you're talking about Casablanca or whatever, and everybody's, and they're great. And the acting to me
was terrible.
Was never
was
as good
terrible.
As today's acting.
No.
You know, and I get that there was never the sense of reality. There was a sense that there was a movie star and he had makeup on and he had a script and I'm going to read my lines and say, but there's no real.
Yeah.
De Niro part of it, right? There's no, like, you felt like you were in the middle of it and all that. It's just reading lines.
Say hello to my little friend.
I'm just, I could have been an actor, is what I'm saying. I could have been an actor back in the 40s.
I could have been a contender.
Yeah, good movie, though. It's a good movie.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. It kind of tells you the near tragic story of Ben Hogan, but actually the miraculous recovery. Yeah. And we talk about Tiger, and that's where a lot of the comparisons come, because they're both great golfers. They both have had extremely bad luck with injuries. And Hogan came back, and if I'm not mistaken, Frank, right after the injury, within a year, didn't he win a U.S. Open?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
And Hogan, like, broke a leg. He got crushed. A bus.
His legs were crushed.
In his car in California in a crash. And then I think he won three more majors after that.
Interesting. Here in the movie, right before he's driving with his wife, he just won, I think, the PGA or whatever it was. And it's foggy. And he's driving, and his wife's in the car with him. And he's leaning forward trying to see, you know. And all of a sudden, there's a road sign right there. It says Fort Worth, 476 miles. Well, he had just said previous to that, it's good to be back in Texas. Now, if you're in, is it 476 miles from the border of Texas and New Mexico to Fort Worth?
It's a big state.
It's not that big.
No, but I'll say this. I think, well, yeah, it is. It is definitely that far from the border.
Is it? Well, maybe it's right. I thought I'd found something in a movie that was just a total faux pas.
But I thought his accident was, I guess I'm wrong. You're right. It was way out west Texas. I was thinking it was California, but he was coming from California, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that correct? He was driving from California, but the accident. Yeah, if you're in El Paso.
From Pebble, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. If you're in El Paso or anywhere in west Texas, yeah, you're easily probably 600, 700 miles from Dallas.
Okay.
It's a long way. You keep driving.
I sit correct.
So you didn't find that little niche, but yeah, it was almost. by the way, Bryson DeChambeau, I'm anxious to see him playing again. I would love, because I really like Bryson. I'd like to see him. And with his irons and stuff, if he chose to go the Tiger route, he certainly could, right?
And
hit three and four irons and probably get 300 yards on every one of them. Just another guy to keep track of Shane Lowry loves these tournaments. We didn't even mention Cam Smith, you know, who won last year and then quickly went to the LIV Tour, and he's back. There is something about the Open, and I think the rain is going to be a factor. They're saying it rained a lot during the rain rained a lot during this week. They're
64 degrees every day, and light rain, very light rain all week is what the forecast says right now.
Sometimes it just gets annoying, you know, even as a viewer to watch to see if these guys got to grab their umbrellas or do different things. But
I hate it.
There's the drama. This could be the year of a Todd Hamilton, right, Frank? I mean, you can almost throw the entire field into a pot and pull out a name and say, okay, this year it's going to go to Travis Smythe or somebody, right? You're not even thinking of who they are.
You know, we say that about Todd, but if you look at his career over there in Asia and Japan, he won a lot. I mean, he played really, really well. So he just wasn't on the PGA Tour here. But, you know, he wasn't a journeyman. I mean, he was a good player.
His history at the Open Championship, I can give you this much. His history at the Open back to 92, and it's cut, 45th, cut, 68th, 32nd, cut.
Well, speaking to what he just said, which
is... And there's a one in the middle of all that, Frank. There's a one.
I know.
So you won one.
Hey, it's more than we got. We couldn't make the cut.
Yeah.
But to speak to what he said, guys go over there and try to play those courses, and you don't acclimate to it in a week from Japan or China or the USA. You just don't.
Yeah.
It's, we've all been over there. I mean, it's difficult, and you better listen to your caddies.
And it's nice that it's interesting to see that he had that one swing thought, right? That he kind of just figured out, I'm not playing well. I didn't play well in practice rounds. And then somehow on the range, he goes, you know what? I got to stop being so open with my left hip.
Yep.
And that one little thing, that's the only thing I thought of. Because as you and I both know, normally our head's filled with 19 different swing thoughts, tin cup.
Like, where's the golf cart, the liquor?
But how many tees I'm going to have in my left pocket? You know, I got all these thoughts in my head. He goes, I had one. Just square it up like that. Yeah.
I wrote that down. Buckle. Now I'll add to that because if you take your belt buckle and align it with the buttons or snaps, if you're wearing PXG apparel, on your shirt, get that aligned. So now you're square to the target, and your square knees and feet. And when I start doing that, when he said that, I went ding, because I invariably drop that right foot back and try to come from the inside and really rip at it. if I square it up and just swing smoothly and rhythmically, it hits it in the middle of the club face. Yeah. Why I don't do that every time, I have no idea.
And he's right that I think is the real key. You hit it square. Yes, it is not going to always go perfectly straight into the cup.
No.
But hitting it square, it's like we all appreciate, you know, when you hit a good shot, and if it ends up on the fringe, you're still feeling good that I hit that ball good. Now, I didn't line up right, or I pulled a little bit here, but you can feel it when you hit that ball, which means you get very little vibration. It's almost like you don't even hit anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen a lot for the amateurs. I'm sure for the pros, it's a normal feeling for them, but that's a huge key is hit that. Art Selinger said that 1,000 times when you say, well, how do you hit the ball farther? You know, Mr. Long Driver.
Hit it in the middle of the club face.
Hit it in the middle of the club face. He goes, you can try to swing harder. You can take it back longer. You can do that. You can hit it in the middle of the club face. And we've all done that once in a while. For whatever reason, we get calm.
Yeah.
And we swing easy. And you go, wow, that ball really took off.
A couple of hydrocodones and a shot of vodka and tequila. And smooth.
Hey, by the way, one other headline. Did you see this, Frank, about Tiger's ex-girlfriend, dropped her lawsuit?
Yes, saw that.
So that's done and finished, I guess. I don't know if there was a settlement involved. I guess there might not have been. And that whole thing was not very attractive for Tiger, who's already had enough issues off the golf course to last three lifetimes. But that one is at least gone. So I don't know when we're going to hear or see from Tiger again. But
does that mean she's no longer the manager of the Rusters restaurant down there?
I'm pretty sure she's not managing that restaurant anytime soon.
Or she wasn't. Maybe she went back to doing that now.
Yeah.
Or managing whatever.
Get it
well,
right.
good for them. You know, clean it up, get it done, all the heartache out of it, and let's go have some fun and play some golf.
All right.
Yeah. So can't stand all that stuff. So you playing today?
That's it. I don't think I am. I played on Monday. It's so freaking hot. And I know that it's kind of Texas in the summer. I get it. But at some point, I played on Monday, and I was really drained by 17, 18. Like I was. Okay, a couple more. Like, I can barely get there.
Are you doing liquid IV or Gatorade or any of that?
No, I'm drinking fluid. Yeah, when I'm playing.
Yeah,
but,
me too. Vodka, cranberry, splash of orange juice.
Yeah, I mean, because we played in the morning. We played in the morning, but by the time, I think by noon, it's still 100 degrees by noon.
Yeah, it's too hot. You know, it's too dangerous.
Late in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Late in the afternoon. It's when, at least around here, maybe that's everywhere, but around here, the hottest part of the day is usually from like 3 o'clock to 6 or 7 o'clock.
Yeah, same
late
thing
in the afternoon. And yesterday, I got up to 108. I think I went to get the grocery store, and I opened my front door, and like, who turned on the furnace? Yeah, yeah, it's like I'm probably not going to play today. Although not a cloud in the sky.
Don't go play. go play a course with trees like bluegrass where I play.
Yes, yeah,
lots of trees. Deep trees rough. Help. Just really easy. Well, we're thunderstorms and flooding and all sorts of stuff here in Nashville. It's the apocalypse over Sin City. One quick thing for our listeners about coming to Nashville now. The City Council of Davidson County has set forth a resolution. They'll be talking about it tonight in their meeting, I guess. That now, Music City, right, Tim? Right? Nashville,
right.
Downtown, Broadway, all the music venues stacked up all up and down Broadway with all their windows open and speakers pointing out. Can't do that, and they can't do that anymore. The city council said it's too noisy, and you need to point those speakers in and shut your windows.
Seriously?
I about fell out of my chair when I heard this. Guess what? You can't have casinos in Vegas either, right? Okay, that works. No,
Was it annoying? Just you as an average person, just giving your opinion. Was it annoying if you walked around?
People come here for. It's like New Orleans.
It's the atmosphere, right?
Yeah,
it's the atmosphere.
You walk down the street and you hear different music coming out of different venues. But our city council, lack of intelligence council.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, hell, they're trying to legislate, what time we're supposed to get up in the morning and go to bed at night.
Yeah. Everything.
Crap.
Everything.
You can't legislate morality. That was proven in the 20s, wasn't it?
That seems pretty crazy that they would say, for a place known in an area known for music.
What politician do you think is sane?
That you're like, okay, let's keep it quiet.
Come on, Tim.
Really? Yeah,
really? I don't even want to say that. It'll be picked up in the Dallas Morning News. Yeah. Tim Matthews, CBS Sports Dallas.
That's all right.
I wish you were here so you could watch all of our local channels covering weather all day, preempting everything. I know you'd love it.
break in because there's wet stuff coming from the sky. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Jesus, anyway. All right, it's going to be a great Open Championship. It's going to be fun.
Yes, it starts early, so everybody out there, be sure you check your local listings because wherever you're at listening to this in the U.S., it could be anywhere, Frank. We're huge in Australia.
We are.
But
Australia.
Anywhere.
We really are the number one show in Australia.
You check out where you got to listen or watch the Open, and it could be, in our case, here in the central United States, it's going to be early morning. If you want to watch some of these guys, you're up at, or recording, obviously, but you can watch it live at 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, but somebody will spoil it for you. That's,
wow.
You know.
That's a tough thing. I'm not a good, although I think, you know, I'm going to, tomorrow, Spieth, the guy that I want to watch, is going off at 3, I think, 3 a.m. is when he starts Dallas time. So I'll record that. But when I get up, which I'll probably get up maybe at 5, and so I'll have to go back over 2 hours worth and watch to see. Yeah. And I'll catch up. If you cut out commercials and all that, you can kind of catch up. I'm usually not a good record it and keep my ears and eyes closed and find out 6 hours later and go watch it. I'll never do that.
Yeah, you know, I can't do that.
Yeah, so I'll record a little bit. I'll cheat a little bit on some of the early. I'll probably miss his first front nine.
Wouldn't it be nice if they did the lottery that way?
Would it be easier to win, Frank? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying.
If those balls,
it's $1 billion right now. Are you kidding?
Is it up to $1 billion again?
It's over $1 billion.
Unbelievable.
That's crazy. The chances of winning are about 1 in 1 billion.
Yeah,
but you can't win if you don't.
I would say
play.
Getting bitten by a shark, but it seems like more and more that's happening, isn't it?
Yeah. Down just ask Jay Monahan.
Yeah. I mean, there's.
Sorry,
there's
some, that was bad.
By the way. I didn't see a lot of coverage on that. I guess maybe we misjudged that he was going to get a lot of cameras and microphones in front of him. Have you seen
nothing.
Much of Monahan being
nothing.
Back to work this week?
Nothing.
I haven't either.
I think he probably choppered in, landed on the fairway.
I was going to say, he's got a tunnel. He's got a tunnel somewhere that they...
Like Disney, yeah. Like the Masters.
He gets to park a mile away, and he walks underground to the office. Yeah,
no, nothing. I would have... I'm sure in Jacksonville, the local news stations were all there. I wish I'd watched their local morning news.
But I would think I'd even see stories, an AP story or something, right?
No, nothing.
Reading the papers or something. I haven't seen anything about Monahan back saying, A, why he was out, even if it was stress-related. He'd say, I was going through a lot. I had a heart murmur or whatever. It's okay. I mean, nothing. I mean, I guess I think somebody wants to know.
This is, you know, you would think we're dealing with national intelligence.
Media letting you down again, letting you down.
Yeah.
All right.
We're done. Again. Really?
Do want to remind you that you need to check out Invited Clubs because Frank and I have been members of Invited Clubs for the last several years.
Long time.
And we enjoy it whether you're in Nashville, whether you're in Dallas, West Coast, East Coast, North, South, doesn't matter. They've got clubs all over the country. Go to invitedclubs.com, formerly Club Corp. And you can find a club near you, join or kick the tires and check them out. See if you're in Dallas, a place like this, you got multiple choices, 12, 14 clubs. The different parts of the country have 1 or 2 or 5 different clubs.
Yeah.
They also have dinner clubs. So it's all right there for you on their website. Check them out, invitedclubs.com.
And be sure to check out PXG.com.
PXG.
The clubs I play, I love them. They're just great golf clubs. Check them out, pxg.com. They've got some specials going on right now on fittings. 75% off on a fitting.
And they're making balls now, too.
And those balls are good.
A dozen golf balls.
$39.95. They went into the market at $39.99 or whatever.
Yeah.
That's a Pro V1X. It's basically a Pro V1. It's a great golf ball. I mean, a lot of folks at my club are playing it now. I took a bunch that they sent me and sprinkled them around out at Bluegrass, and people are now buying them. So, good clubs.
Nice.
What was that? You cooking breakfast?
PXG.
What did you drop? Sounds like you dropped a spatula.
No, just my pen. All right, that's it for us. Again, enjoy the Open Championship. I'm going to call it the British Open.
Let's
see if they want to come over here and start
the
a fight.
United Kingdom Open.
The British Open Championship at Royal Liverpool. Should be a lot of fun. Thank you to Todd Hamilton, 2004 Open Champion, for joining us. We'll talk to Todd again down the road a little bit. A lot of fun talking with him. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us. And remember to join us next time right here for Golf Talk America.